This is CliffCentral.com.
There ain't no doubt about it.
No doubt about it. It is Friday. And yeah, music. Double play. Double plays are cool because then I get to write the blurbs because the podcast needs to go out. Yeah, jeepers. That's really professional, Ben. Just tell everyone what you're thinking. Right, so today is Friday and Gareth and Sia will be back on Tuesday. Gordon will be back. No, I don't know. But if your thoughts and prayers have not reached Gordon yet, we'll send him some because he's feeling under the weather. We've got George Meany coming in just a bit to talk about some cars. But I told you I had a pretty dreadful story about human trafficking. Now,
yeah.
We always try to keep things quite light and fluffy here on a Friday. But this story really, I wouldn't say cut me deep. It sounds a bit cliched. But it really makes you think, like, we all know there's some dodgy people out there. And we all see things in movies and we hear different stories and, you know, maybe like urban legends. But stuff is happening out there that is makes you really question or just worry about the human race in general and just how people treat other people. So I got sent this story. And look, it's legit. I kind of cross-referenced it, and I know someone who sent me the story very well. But it's about a Joburg small business owner. Now, obviously, this person is anonymous, but here we go with the story. Look, it's a pretty wordy story, and there's obviously various layers to it. So I'll try to praise it best as possible. And I apologize to the person, the writer of the story if I do leave anything out. But this is the basic gist of it. I don't want to take up too much time with this on your Friday. But in the small business, there are obviously people working and there's open plan and there's tables or whatever. So this one worker went to this person's desk to go and ask this person for something. The person wasn't there, but the person's cell phone was there. Cell phone was open. Cell phone was open with images of young children. Young naked children, as in young naked sex images. It's quite hard to kind of word this, but so what do you do in a situation like that? Like if a coworker has child pornography on their phones, like what do you do? So this person, obviously, you know, it's a fight or flight kind of moment because it's kind of awkward. He chose to look at the pictures, take images of it because he knew something was wrong here. Mm. Turns out there was a conversation going on between this person's colleague, the person whose phone has been left unattended, with this person and a woman in Cape Town about the trafficking of young girls. Now we're talking between the age of 10 to 13.
Whoa.
There's another person on this conversation, what appears to be a man up here in Johannesburg who is now brokering this deal, who has access to these kids and is obviously in the buying and selling on human trafficking.
What?
So they kind of sat with this. The guy took it to the boss of the business and they sat with this. And just think, the staff you have, you've chosen to work at your business, okay? You kind of hope that whatever they do Monday to Friday professionally works, but you also kind of hope they're nice people and they're not dodgy and they're not doing things like this. So suddenly, you think as a business owner, you're in a position like, well, what do we do? There's a conversation here that's been documented of child trafficking. It's as simple as that.
Sure.
There's nothing subtle. These people are looking to literally buy and sell for whatever use these kids. The contents of the conversation went into such detail where they're looking to verify virginities. There is naked pictures being swapped. It is what it is. There's no gray area here.
Yeah.
So what this guy did was he went to the cops. He's got, okay, I mean, look, you obviously there's privacy and all that kind of stuff at play here, but the guy spotted something. He's acting upon it. He's chosen to act upon this. He's taken these images and this conversation thread, and he's now gone to the police station. The police station in his area said this, we don't really care about this. It's not in the jurisdiction of where the crime took place, supposed crime. Meanwhile, it was his local police station.
Mm.
Out of not caring, showing very little interest to this, he was then ferried off to another police station where they basically said this is above our pay grade. This is nothing. But they then said that, well, you can go see a detective. So
where must you go see a detective?
They were taken upstairs. The person in question wasn't there. Again, just shown around different people, different places. No one really seemed to care or know how to deal with this. Again, let's make this perfectly clear. This is a human trafficking story. Children are being trafficked for sexual purposes. This guy has evidence of this taking place with someone that he knows, not only knows, someone in his employment.
He works with.
Okay,
yeah.
So this person reports to their office every day.
Jeepers.
This is what's going on in their private lives. This guy's acting upon this. I mean, I think, like, who wouldn't want to do this? Who wouldn't take a stand here?
Mm.
So now that's okay. So that in itself is a dodgy dynamic. But now, so this person eventually got to speak to somebody, who then rather roughly, was basically interviewing this business owner like he was the person doing the trafficking. Here he is reporting this crime, but he's being interrogated like he's the criminal himself.
Oh my gosh.
So after a very awkward little session of Q&As and back and forth, eventually this person at the police station in a more detective role said, there is someone who deals with this kind of stuff in Alexandra. There's a child abuse kind of, you know, clinic kind of thing. They'll know what to do with this. So the guy goes, cool, let's make a phone call. Make a phone call. No one answered. So the guy said, look, let me take your details. I'll assure you, I'll get back to you on this and we'll sort this out. Over a year, calling, following up, nothing. No one got in touch with him. He couldn't get in touch with them. Suddenly, that whole avenue is now done. Again, I reiterate, this is a pretty clear case of something really dodgy going on. But the local authorities, our first port of call, police people, nothing. Nothing to do.
So what's the update?
So what this guy, in the meantime, this person's still working for him.
No, okay? You are kidding me.
So now he, imagine you go to work and this person that works for you is doing this. And now you can't obviously let the cat out of the bag and say what the hell's in your phone, because again, we're not qualified for this. When you open a business or you go to university or whatever, there isn't a section on, so one of your employees is a sex trafficker. We don't know what to do. So this guy is now thinking, what's the best case scenario here? Starts to seek some legal advice, starts to even approach private investigators. Like, what is the play here? Okay, so they go, well, you know, the cops can't help you. Where are we really going to go? So they try, you know, are we going to try find more evidence on this guy? Are we going to try tap his phones, all that kind of stuff? You start thinking like it's CSI and you're in the middle of this. But in real life's not CSI. So we can't exactly put a tap on this guy and like do this, this and that. Obviously, there's laws to you got to kind of adhere to. So they eventually get in touch with a private detective, private investigator who knows someone at the Hawks who knows something about this. So suddenly, some momentum was taken up here. Someone came from the offices in Pretoria into Johannesburg and they met and they went through all the evidence they've got about this thing happening and saying it's clear cut. The messaging is about trafficking children and there's pictures of the kids. Okay.
And I'm assuming they've gathered evidence because it's been about a year, more evidence in relation to this case.
Well, there can't be any more evidence. What they want to do is clearly try fire this guy.
Okay.
Get him out of the system. Okay. How that is a different story altogether. Basically, that played out in the CCMA. Just on professional reasons, they were able to dismiss him. Okay. So that part of the story is done. But now, so some momentum was then taken up and they were going somewhere with this, but then suddenly everything died. The person that was on the case was then reassigned to a different case. Again, more people were saying, we don't know how to deal with this. This is above our pay grade. So suddenly, after over a year now of this guy, this small business owner, of trying to do something and feeling like he's got someone who's going to help him to get to the bottom of this or just try alert the authorities or who the authorities are, he is still back at square one.
No way.
Again, he has witnessed damning evidence of children being trafficked right here in general life, okay? General life. So you can look around your office today and see someone on the phone that could be trafficking children. Okay, maybe that's a bit strong. Maybe I'm stretching a bit here. But this is what happened in his office, right there. But what do you do? So he feels, so he's written this article and he feels so completely helpless around this. Like, what can he do? He's tried various people. He's consulted with anybody he can think of, but there isn't a single authority in this country that can say, you know what, we know what to do in the situation, let's investigate, let's bring this guy for questioning, we've got evidence to go on, let's make something happen here. Not once has that happened. Not Jesus. Once has he been in a position where they feel they can do this. So whether it be red tape, lack of expertise, it is so disheartening to think that crimes like this, no one knows how to deal with them. No one knows how to punish them. No one knows how to root out these people. And there's the element of no one really cares. So, I mean, this guy, like, he must be so frayed. Like, because this is in your mind every single day, right? It's been well over a year now. If there's any way that you know that you can help a situation like this, and it's a pretty simple human trafficking kind of case, and if it's happening, if we hear this one story, there's another 10 stories like that out there. But if there's no way of counteracting this, there's no way of reporting this to the authorities, then we're pretty much screwed. If you know anything, now I know our audience is rather diverse and interesting and a lot of intelligent people. If you know anyone that can help, knows what to do in a situation like this, how do you report situations like this? What do you do? Please email needsactionplease@gmail.com. I mean, this email address is as simple as it gets because this guy has run out of ideas. Needs, so NEED DS, action, ACTION, and then the word please at gmail.com. Needs action, please. If you have any way that you can possibly help, support, or just give information, if you know of a similar case and how things have gone, please send an email to that with your details and a little bit of support. Like I said, I mean, I read this article. The guy, it's breaking him down inside. It really is. And it's just nothing. He's tried so many different things.
I don't know if this is an option, but I always think and I always see that in terms of like South Africa and how we react to things like this as a society is that unless it's been brought to the attention of the public via news outlets, no one actually really cares, including the government, including law enforcement. So my advice to anyone, I think, who would be in this situation, and I do it now as well when I get stopped by police, because I never know what could go down. Like, we're literally living in those times. I record everything. Sure. So I literally put my phone on voice record and I record the conversation. And if I can take footage, then I take footage. And I think that that's an important part, especially if you're going to report it, maybe not through conventional ways, which is to the police, but maybe to like a news agency where they can break the story. And then
that's a very good point.
The police will be forced to act via the story making headlines and government, you know, kind of commenting and saying stuff and hopefully doing something about it. So yeah, I just find that that helps me feel a lot better about what I'm doing.
Public pressure, yeah.
And that's how we should act. Well, not should, but that's the way that we've been forced to act these days, is that we have to be recording everything in order for people to act.
Mm. Yeah, so if you do have any way you can help out with that, great. And like I said, it's a pretty clear case. There's evidence of a conversation that's taken place with images to back it up of basically buying and selling of young children for express sexual purposes, essentially. And these kids could be snatched from schools. They could have been taken away. Who knows where the story starts, or hopefully where it ends. And you know, it doesn't look like it's ever going to end in a good place. So if you can help out in any way, then great.
He should actually chat to the... Is special assignment still a thing? I'm just trying to think what that show on SABC3 is, where they do investigative journalism, because they investigate like thoroughly.
It's a good point. You know, again, going back to your point about the media, once people know about it in that kind of frame, then they actually care about it. We must get on. It is Friday, and Poppy, I'm not sure if you're a massive fan of Family Guy, but I find
I used to be.
It's still to this day. It's so clever. It's so funny, and it's so quick. And also, it's actually just so risque. So just like South Park, the genius of South Park was that I'm sure the creators came together and said, you know, our ideas are too edgy. They're just too hardcore. We need to find a way of packaging them so they become more acceptable. So they made a very basic animated children's show, essentially, where they could portray all their different people in life and all the different things.
Mm-hmm.
And The Simpsons, to a degree, have done it as well. And these shows have gone on forever. Family Guy, I think, is the most risque out of all of them. It's so quick, it's so witty, but the way it's packaged, they get away with so much. And it is the genius of Seth MacFarlane. If you follow this guy on Twitter, he's just as funny on Twitter, general life. So here he is on the Graham Norton show talking about the various voices, because what I find amazing about these people is that not only is this his show, this is what he's just incredible at producing these kind of things. He also does the voices too, and a lot of characters at that.
Doing Family Guy, I had gotten into the habit of being able to record a line and then go into the booth and listen to it and switch off my brain and kind of feel like I'm listening to somebody else.
Yeah.
And that did kick in pretty early on into the process, where I was able to run into Video Village and look at the, you know, look at the footage and see if I was
doing
it right.
Yeah.
How many voices do you do? Good. Sorry, I mean to take over your interview, but I'm just kind of curious. Like, how many can you do? How many? Like, what's the?
You know, just enough to avoid being myself.
So it's in Family Guy. Family Guy. The characters you do.
Peter, Brian, Stewie, Quagmire, and then a smattering of others as needed.
And are they all based on people, or you just...
They come from various places. Peter, I knew 1,000 Peter Griffins growing up in New England. Guys who would not think before they spoke, like...
No self-editing mechanism. It's coming out here with no gateway.
And then Stewie is based on your own Rex Harrison, who I was a big fan of.
Wow.
Yeah.
And who, Quagmire, where's Quagmire from? That can't be a person.
Quagmire.
If it is, he's not happy.
No, he's a bad egg. He Quagmire, when I was a kid, my father used to buy me old radio dramas from the 40s and 50s. And so I would listen to these things, and the commercials were intact. You'd hear these old commercials, you know, Autolite brand spark plugs, the only spark plugs for you. And like everyone had this high-pitched voice, which I guess the mics were more sensitive to the mid-range voice at that time. And they all sounded like Quagmire, and so that kind of stuck with me. And when I was coming up with a voice for him, that he began as an impression of 1950s ad men.
And when you're doing, because you know those characters are in scenes together.
Yeah.
Do you do one line after the other, or do you all do all one and then go back and do the other one?
When I do a table read, yeah, I have to jump back and forth. Where it's like, hey, what's going on? Oh, hello, fat man. Oh, Stewie, how are you? Back and forth.
It's good, right? Yeah. That is good.
Showing us.
But then sometimes you do them separately.
Yeah, when I record the shows, I kind of literally do it one line at a time just to make sure that
But that's not really because of the voices. It's just because you have to be naked, completely naked for Brian.
Completely nude.
The essence of yourself.
Completely emotionally and physically nude.
Oh, can you do the coon whip thing?
The what?
The coon whip. No, I feel like Dance Monkey. I feel like I'm just got a big stick.
I'm a barking seal.
Do the music
thing. Barking seal, aren't I, Graham Norton? You know, you're an Irishman. You think these people accept you as one of their own, but they don't. They don't accept you at all. Yeah, so Brian, would you like some Cool Whip?
But why are you saying it like that?
What am I saying? I'm saying Cool Whip.
Oh, you're saying Cool Whip.
Yes, I'm saying Cool Whip.
You're putting a lot of emphasis on the H.
No, Cool Whip. I'm saying Cool Whip.
Say cool.
Cool.
Say whip.
Whip.
It's such an amazing talent. It really is. We've had lots of voice people on the show before, but it's just incredible how you can just deliver.
I don't know how I didn't know that he did all the voices. Like.
But it's like, what's his name? Hank, someone other than The Simpsons. He does about 8 of the characters.
Sure.
And he's been doing about 8 of the characters for 20-something years. It's got to start taking its toll on you, though, because when you go to bed, what do you dream as? What character do you dream as?
When you talk to people, how do you speak to them?
You can't always revert to who you are, but if you're on like a long road trip by yourself, you start talking to yourself.
I'd enjoy that. I need other voices in my head.
Speaking of showbiz, we haven't heard much from Harvey Weinstein of late.
Thank God.
Yes, for good reasons. That's always the response we kind of get. But Salma Hayek has been someone who's now come out and said a few things. Now, Salma Hayek was, she was in a lot of Harvey's movies. Now, when we watch movies, we know the actresses and actors, maybe the director. We don't really know who's kind of pushing the paper in the background. Harvey was doing a lot of that because Harvey, as he would say, he could make or break careers. And that was his whole thing. He was just one of the most powerful men in Hollywood. So powerful that he thought that he could just whip out his cock at any given stage, ask for massages. He was a dreadful individual. He still is. I'm sorry, but leopards don't really change their spots, as they say. And fat sexual predators don't change their fat sexual predatoriness, which is what Harvey is. So Salma Hayek has said that, well, she was constantly pestered and having sexual advances made in her by Harvey during these processes. He threatened to kill her once, and
what?
He basically forced her into doing a lesbian scene in a movie. Pretty strong allegations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Harvey's hit back, basically saying that these allegations are substanceless, like all the other ones, blah, 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 playing the Bill Cosby defense. But he did actually bring up an interesting point, that the character Frida Kahlo, who Salma was playing, was actually a bisexual person in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So the sex scene was part of the character because she was obviously bisexual and also into women. I don't know if these stories are actually worth kind of pursuing, but Harvey's just basically putting out fires for the rest of his life. Salma Hayek did say, and again, I always like to bring up this point because people always say, like, well, why didn't she report this stuff and why are people only coming out now? Is that Hayek actually got to the point where she brainwashed herself, thinking none of this is actually happening. And I think this is a great example of what's happened to a lot of these women and a lot of these situations, is that you feel like, you're helpless to what's happening in the industry. If Harvey Weinstein says do this and you don't do this, and he says, I'm going to kill you, or you'll get no movies ever again. It's kind of real because he was such a big shot. So she, and I'm sure many other actresses, many other people in the situation, have kind of gone through a stage where they just try to block it out and they never think about it. But then obviously with this whole Me Too movement, people coming out against Harvey, they're putting more and more of this comes out. So therefore, you can't hide it anymore. Fresh memories come back up, and that is why they started coming out of the woodwork, as they say.
Especially if you threaten to kill someone. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is a bit ridiculous. It's a bit strong. So our resident doctor, Dr. Jonathan Witt, he has kind of stepped in with this whole man flu is real.
Yes, doctor.
Claim scientists. But not all GPs are convinced. That's the top end of the story. I've just got the story. I don't know if I can go through it. Women have been, this is from the Independent. This is what they've written about man flu. So all you people who've been saying, Ben, what the hell do you know about man flu? Well, here we go. Women and Ben Karpinski have long moaned about that men in their lives are coming down with man flu and turning into feeble, moaning little boys. But according to a new study, there's actually some truth in the idea of man flu. It all comes back to our caveman ancestors. Okay, well, that's hardly a credible line to start off with. It all comes back to our caveman ancestors. Men have weaker immune systems than women, which are used in order to stop them from going out and hunting when ill.
You hear that? Weaker immune systems.
So basically, that's strange. We should have stronger if we need to go out and hunt.
Weaker sex.
Yeah, okay, Poppy. A Canadian study was carried out to try and find out whether men really do experience worse symptoms than women, whether or it's just a myth. In what is thought to be the first study of its kind, Dr. Kyle Sue, a clinical assistant professor at Memorial University of Newfoundland, analyzed relevant research and found evidence that adult men have a higher risk of hospital admission and higher rates of influenza-associated deaths compared with women, regardless of underlying disease. Dr. Sue also found that men are more susceptible to complications and higher mortality from many acute respiratory diseases, while some evidence supported men suffering more from viral respiratory illness than women because they have less robust immune systems. Research also found that premenopausal women are better at fighting off a common cold thanks to a study of male and female cells. I think we got enough information there. Thanks, Dr. Jonathan Wood.
What's making you?
It still doesn't say it, but flu is flu. It's like saying, well, I got a man punch in the face. If you've got a strong jaw or not, you're still getting punched.
Yeah, but if you've got a stronger body and you've got more resistance, I get it. It makes sense. So you guys, basically, the flu hits you harder because y'all's immune systems haven't caught up to ours. It's okay. We get it.
The bigger question, Poppy, is what are you women doing with your better immune systems?
We're giving birth and looking after your asses.
See, so, yeah, okay. Oh, fair enough. Like, I'm still not going to be someone that go, oh, I've got man flu. I'll take it, I've got flu. It's just that my man body isn't that good at preparing it for stuff like that. Again, this doctor has a very normal name. We can't trust the results, says Michelle. Oh, okay. Well, moral of the story is that women are generally stronger when it comes to this kind of stuff. And women also have a higher pain threshold, don't they?
Obviously, because we have to push things out of us. Well, that sounds wrong. I meant give birth. That's what I meant.
A lot of birthing references coming from you this morning, Poppy.
And I've never even given birth.
Yeah. Men may not be... I can't get into the story anymore, but basically what it's saying is that when us men get the flu, it's just not good. It's just not good. George is running a little bit late, so I know you're getting to our car feature today. But also, you know, Friday, it is a really great day. So if you are in the office, you are listening live, or if you just pick up the podcast, Friday is a great day for various reasons. We've got the Just Now Comedy guys that are coming in from 9 until 10. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the Sex Talk with John T. Searle. Now, this is probably, in my mind, one of the best technical shows on this entire platform. And I don't say this lightly because John T. comes in here and seduces us with donuts and or muffins. The guy puts a lot of effort into the show. He really does. But at 8 o'clock, we've got a guest, Gareth pre-recorder for us, of holistic healing versus medicinal healing. Now, Dr. Witt, I'm sure we'll love to listen to this. It's because he was on it. Holistic healing versus medical science. Where do you stand on this? So Dr. Jonathan Witt and crystal healers Shuan Odendal and Yonita Singh join Gareth and the team to discuss their beliefs and why they are equally passionate about them. Both sides speak about the attention devoted to patients and time taken during sessions, as well as what medicine actually does. Of course, never want to shy away from voicing his opinions. Dr. Witt explains why he believes humans are more just like cockroaches and why he's surprised homeopathy is still around in this day and age. Dr. Witt also has a possible reason for Sears chondritis. You know, Sears got chondritis.
What's chondritis?
Do you know what chondritis is? Go listen to the next hour, Poppy. The conversation surprisingly ends off with unexpected common ground between the two sides being felt. So that is what we got in the next hour.
I'm very interested in that because I don't believe in medicine.
Really? You don't believe
in... As in personally for myself, I feel like my body can deal with a lot of the stuff that, you know, life
so
and
you
the
never
environment.
So you never take antibiotics?
Never take anything. I think the last time I took an antibiotic was maybe 10 years ago when something was going on with my tooth, but I don't and it helped then. So.
But you are naturally pretty healthy though.
Yeah, and I think if you look after your body a lot of the time, it in turn learns how to treat certain things that are common. So you don't need like the odd Panado, you don't need cough syrup, you don't need any of that stuff. So, for instance, the last time I had flu, like I said to you, I've only really had it once. I didn't take anything. I slept for 2 days and I woke up, went on a run, and I was amazing and I was good to go. And I haven't had flu since.
Yeah, I'm also a believer if you get a good healthy diet, you can get a lot of things that medicine's trying to give you. But there are such situations when you do get into a position where you are sick that you have to have antibiotics and just different
but
things
Ill,
to kill.
Ill, ill.
Yeah, like sick, sick,
not
ill.
Mickey Mouse.
Not like boy flu.
Yeah.
Right, if you are...
Now it's boy flu. Wow. You really are patronizing this man flu.
Bringing on the haters. You know, we spoke about the reality TV shows earlier on in the show. Here's another example I wanted to bring up was that show Come Dine With Me.
Yes.
It's a bit different because, like, we spoke about Love Island is all about these perfect people and they're all so good looking and it's like a guilty pleasure to watch such a thing because, you know, we all want to kind of be like that a bit in life and just, you know, be sexy on the beach. Come Dine With Me is like the other extreme. So it's very much the other side of the spectrum. Here you've got people stuffing their faces, getting drunk, and living very everyday lives. You go actually into their houses. Mm. Now, there was a South African version of this, and though it was kind of mildly entertaining, it was not nearly as good as the British one. So with the Brits, I mean, you can just see most Brits are quite thick-set people. They have a lot of comfort eating because of where the weather is and just how the things are structured in their lives. You generally find they will be a lot more thick-set, especially as you go into more the middle part of England. So Come Dine With Me really showcases this and showcases interactions around this and the different dynamics of having a dinner party. Now, one of the great sort of like cliched talk show questions is if you could have a dinner party of people dead or alive, who would you choose?
Yes.
Come Dine With Me. These people are thrown together and they're a mismatch of weirdos, really. So you'll have a mixture of female, male, introvert, extrovert, all that kind of stuff. And Come Dine With Me creates these sort of melting pot situations. So here's a guy called Peter, and he obviously felt that he was going to win. He was the person who went last. So how it works, if you haven't seen the show, is that there's four people. Each of them hosts a dinner party at their house. The other three people then rate them on their performance. So it was like the general food, the ambiance, the general experience, and they give them a number out of 10.
Yeah.
The person with the highest number after all of those dinners then gets a cash prize.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter is the last guy, and this is how he gets on, because the last person then announces the winner and presents the cash.
Here to read out the results. This could be interesting.
So let's see who's won. In fourth place is me.
Oh.
His face just literally dropped because he thought he was going to win.
Shame.
You can see he's looking at these people with the most devil eyes ever.
Oh.
What are you shaking your head at me?
You won, Jane.
Oh, my God.
Enjoy the money. I hope it makes you very happy. Dear Lord, what a sad little life, Jane.
Wow.
You ruined my night completely so you could have the money, but I hope now you spend it on getting some lessons in grace and decorum, because you have all the grace of a reversing dump truck without any tyres on.
don't
get it.
Well, you wouldn't, let's be honest. There's nobody in there, love. So, Jane, take your money and get off my property.
Doggy bag, anyone?
So, well done, Jane.
Thanks.
Just for the record, Charlotte and Adam came joint second.
It's a travesty that I didn't win. An utter travesty. The best food, the best presentation, the best table, and that I get graded under Adam. Under Adam, who produced a plate of vomit. Under Charlotte, who served up rancid, chewy pork and an undercooked chocolate brownie. So I lose, and she wins. I hope she enjoys her money.
Poisonous Pete has kicked us out of his house because he's a very sore loser.
I hope you're not aiming that through his window.
He wasn't impressed that he came for, and I don't think he's impressed that he got beat by me.
These people are now doing the interviews outside in the cold, like an alleyway.
Because he kicked them out.
He literally kicked them out.
Because I haven't got anything going on up here, apparently. I feel really, really, really great. I mean, this is absolutely brilliant. I'm buzzing, absolutely buzzing right now.
The way that she took that abuse tonight, like, she deserves a billion points.
Despite Peter's little hissy tantrum that he had at the end of the night, good luck to him and all the best. I hope, you know, he's happy.
Yeah, so I think when it comes down to it, that's Come Down With Me would make one, probably my top three reality TV shows.
I also enjoy it. It took me a while to get into it, but it's just, the personalities.
It really is just show. So real. It's so real. And like a friend of mine was on the South African version, and with all these reality shows, obviously there's a fair amount of scripting, there's a fair amount of staging that goes on. But you feel with these guys, they kind of let them go more because, let's be honest, Brits are characters. They spend most of their lives in pubs. They're mostly drunk, and they're just very articulate of how they can insult each other. It's marvelous. It really is.
How's the food?
Stodgy.
Really?
I don't know.
No, as in like the one South African episode I think I watched, the lady put, is it garlic bread?
Yeah.
I think she put the garlic bread in the microwave with the foil on.
Oh, yeah, that's a particularly bad idea. That's not good for anyone.
It was hilarious. We also have some characters. They just have to dig deep to find them.
Okay. Bobby, anything else you got before we get George in here?
Is George here?
He's on his way. He is running late, but he drives a very fast car, so he'll be with us in a moment of seconds.
Can we talk about what car it is? I just need to know whether I should level up or not.
George drives. I think he's got that really the big, powerful V8 Jeep. I think that's currently what he's got.
Okay.
That SRT kind of thingy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I follow, because I'm interested in AI, I'm obsessed with like what robots are coming and what people are doing. So overseas, they've basically got a robot for everything already. Yep. Now, excepting one robot that I have not seen anywhere that I need to implore people to make. And I don't think I'm speaking for myself here. As a woman, the last thing you want to do after a night out is physically take your own makeup off.
Yes.
It is the biggest pain ever. You don't have the energy. It's just so much work. So I would like to see a robot that actually takes your makeup off for you. I think we're there now, surely.
Is it not like a mask you can put on your face that will then just
that's
do...
That's long things, my man. We don't want to... You just want to lie there and your makeup to be removed.
No, but you lie there with a mask that does... You turn the mask on and it's got a few nodes in it, which does it for you. Why do you want a full robot? You know how expensive full robots are?
Okay, a mask. You still have to you might as well take your own makeup off if you're still going to put something on your face yourself.
Poppy, you sound like you're being hard to please here.
I'm just saying, ask any woman who goes out with makeup on after a Friday night of drinks and dancing with the girls. You just want to hit the sack.
I got you. No, I get that part of your story. But think of it like putting on a pair of headphones. You're putting on a mask. That mask will then, for 3 minutes, will sort of lightly massage your face. And then, hey presto, in the process, you have no makeup.
It doesn't even sound hygienic.
Oh, but yet some robot... pouring at you is going to be just a-okay.
It just sounds better. That's what I'm hoping someone's investing in when it comes to
to AI, what robots are you hoping for?
It's
going to make your life easier.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing. I think any government office, home affairs, just general admin bots everywhere, but like everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for people losing jobs just mm-hmm. so that we can have better lives, because once we have better lives, we can be more efficient. We can use our minds to apply ourselves elsewhere. Now, I know Sweden's got this major problem because they're one of the most amazingly advanced countries. Like, these guys will buy your trash because they need your trash to make electricity and power. They are so advanced. They are getting machines to do all kinds of things. Like, really, it's amazing. But yet they're taking in vast amounts of people from other countries
mm-hmm.
who are unskilled, getting to a very mechanized country. So now you got people who have very basic skills. I mean, it's a reflection on the world where things are going, because you've got first world countries that are pushing so hard to be part of this whole AI thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got other countries who aren't upskilling their people. I mean, if you look at China right now, yesterday we spoke on the Burning Platform how, you know, the people who are leading this country are not leading us with the rest of the world. The rest of the world is leaving us behind.
Yep.
So I'm all for robots coming into it and making us humans have to work smarter and harder elsewhere. So,
oh wow! So you're basically working against what AI, because our lives are supposed to be easier and we're supposed to do less work.
Yes, so, but it's like the basic stuff, so we can think of bigger and better things to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I'm going with this, and then we can actually go forward in life, and that's why we can then spend time getting better suggestions of how we can combat man flu. If we've got robots who do our day-to-day stuff, like tax and all that kind of shit, you can just put things in, then we can all focus on the bigger things in life. But I think, like, it gets to the stage where, yesterday I had a funny moment. I still don't know how to do a screenshot on my new phone. No idea. I screenshot a lot of things.
What phone is that, my guy? You could Google this, you know that, right?
Yeah. And
you're trying to learn the hard way.
No, I couldn't come up with a comprehensive solution of how to find this. But if I just say, okay, Google, take a screenshot, it takes a screenshot. But I don't want to keep talking into my phone. So as I was talking to my phone, my Uber driver's phone then said, sorry, could you repeat that? So suddenly it was like, I'm not talking to you. But it's going to get to that stage.
I can help you with this if you let me.
Sure, puppy. Sure. George, hi.
How's it been?
Solid. How are you doing?
Good and you?
Not so bad. We're talking about AI and what robots we need. Poppy needs a robot to take off her makeup.
I heard that.
Pretty much all that her life needs right now. Otherwise, she's peachy.
Hmm. Take off your makeup. I'm imagining how that will work.
Well, I suggested a sort of self-cleansing mask, and she said it was unhygienic.
Yeah, because where's the water going to come from? It just sounds like a wet wipe solution.
Poppy, I tried.
Don't you use wet wipes anyway?
Let the record show that I tried. George, what's going on in the world of cars, where technology is very much at the forefront at every given stage?
Well, you know Steve McQueen. Well, you don't know Steve McQueen.
Lightning,
you know,
Steve McQueen.
Lightning Steve McQueen. Yeah, the Cars movie character was named after Steve McQueen. Well, they have found his 1968 Ford Mustang GT. It was used in a classic film called The Bullet.
Yep.
I didn't even know that film existed.
Yeah. It's one of those, look, it'd be boring as hell to watch.
Yeah.
But it's one of those that the purists will say, oh, it's a classic. You got to watch it.
And so this car has been found and is going to be used at the 2018 Goodwood Festival of Motoring and in the hill climb.
Was it found in decent shape?
It was found in decent shape. Apparently a gentleman by the name of Sean Kiernan inherited this car in 2014 from his late father, Robert.
Oh, wow.
And he phoned Ford and said, I have this car. I don't know how cars like that disappear, to be honest.
People with lots of money, George, they pick these things up at dodgy auctions or at poker games.
So now what Ford have done is they've built a new one, new model, and they've called it the Ford Mustang Bullet. And the first one sold for 3.6 million rand.
Wow.
On an auction, and the proceeds went to charity.
Jeepers. Is it a good-looking car? I mean, because you came in the other day with... one. They've done a nice job with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's called the Ford Mustang Bullet. I suppose if it gains popularity, they might put it into the mainstream. Well, an even more interesting story is a gentleman by the name of Travis Pastrana.
Yes, he is a motorcyclist.
Yes, and he fancies himself as the next Evel Knievel.
Oh, that's going to end badly.
It might end badly because Travis Pastrana at the Nitro Circus, or should I say with the Nitro Circus crew, he's going to debut a three-hour broadcast called Evel Live. And he's going to attempt three jumps.
Over buses, over water features, over hotels?
Well, all of the above. So his first jump is going to be to beat Evel Knievel's 14 Greyhound bus jump.
But is he going to do it on a Evel bike or is he going to use a current bike? Because you know Evel Knievel, the whole thing about him is that he had a real dog shit bike that he was doing all the stuff on.
Yeah, and that's why he crashed.
So that's why he kept crashing because the suspension was basically like spaghetti or it was terrible.
So he's using a V-twin model, which has double the amount of power to the Evel Knievel bike. And although it's got double the power, it weighs 100 pounds more than Evel Knievel's bike. So it is a newer bike.
Right.
I suspect that he might just get these things right. So he's going to attempt 16 Greyhound buses. Evel Knievel did 14. Mm-hmm. And he's also going to attempt 50 crushed cars, which goes beyond Knievel's old record. But the big stunt, the last stunt.
He's probably going to do it sober as well. So there's nothing like Evel Knievel here.
Exactly, although he fancies himself Evel Knievel. He's going to try and jump over the fountains of the main Caesar's palace.
Oh, wow.
So the story goes that Evel Knievel, when he attempted this jump, he walked into the casino, placed $100 on blackjack, lost the bet. And then he stopped at the bar and got a shot of wild turkey and then walked outside and attempted that historic jump. Failed, landing plummeting to the ground, landed in hospital, broke his pelvis, his femur, and his hip, wrist, and ankles, and was in a coma for 29 days. So Mr. Travis Pastrana, hopefully he actually makes this.
George, there's this incredible podcast series. Actually, there's a two-part series about Evel Knievel's life. Okay, first up, he's one of the most dreadful human beings ever. he was a dreadful drunk womanizer, but when it came to these stunts, it's like he almost knew he wasn't going to make it, but that wasn't the point. He would just round up money from all kinds of people, and he hustled like no one else. And he just thought, well, the injuries are a byproduct of this because it adds to his legend.
Yeah, yeah.
But you must. I'll try to find this podcast for you. It is incredible. I mean, he was just such an amazing individual and what happened around him. And no one will ever be like that.
Well, Travis Pastrana is trying, but, hopefully he doesn't crash as much. And then finally, a grandmother at the age of 80, her name is Julia Alba. In June 2017, did a drive from the east from Cape Town for 12,000 kilometers and went to visit her daughter in London.
By herself?
No, she had a partner in crime.
That's a really lonely road.
Traveled across 11 African countries, 9 European countries, and completed the journey of her destiny.
Wow.
And the combined age of the two people in the car were over 100 years. And she drove a 20-year-old Toyota Corolla. Remember these Tazzas?
Yeah. Is there a list of what countries she went through in Africa? Because I would imagine that's is quite an important thing to try to plot the course of.
I think it is because you would more than likely have to go somewhere in the middle towards East Africa, I would imagine. I don't have the list of countries she went through, but I would imagine it's, you know, around the eastern side of Africa, because if you go down around the western side of Africa, I think you might be in trouble.
Well, yeah, I mean, like two things. Obviously, terrain is a huge thing. You're in a car that's not a 4x4.
Yeah.
And secondly, of course, just for general safety. I mean, there's some countries, like if you end up in the DRC, I don't think you're going to leave the DRC.
Exactly.
Or you might, but you're not going to have any belongings with you.
Maybe her age played a part. I mean,
true?
who's gonna beat up or arrest an 80-year-old?
Maybe, well, especially one as determined as that one.
Exactly. So so good on her. She went from Cape Town to London and completed the journey.
Jeepers. But that's what it's like. I've got this adventurer friend, and his role was his big goal was also to drive from Cape Town to London, and he had the support crew, all that kind of stuff. He did it, but it took about 5 years of planning because he didn't want anything to be like, you know, forgotten about. And it is, it's hard, it's a very difficult kind of thing. You will encounter things you never thought about, but it's like the ultimate journey. Like that feeling when you get to London and you just see, firstly, like after spending months and months in like very sort of rural places, once you get onto continental Europe and you get onto that,
I mean let's be honest, third world environment, and then suddenly you drive into this first world you know, organized country.
Yeah,
it's got to be something that I think lots of people dream about and never really execute.
If you had a choice between doing that or just doing like across the states in America,
probably across the states.
Let's just say you and you can pick which you think is the most compatible car for either of those. Which would you do?
For each of those, so across America, I'd probably want to go in a sedan. Comfortable luxury car, like you know, Mercedes-Benz E-Class, mm-hmm. or you know, something with comfort. Across Africa, probably a Toyota Fortuner or a Hilux, because Toyota is very very entrenched in Africa.
So that's the point I was going to make. Yeah. So if something does happen, someone knows how to fix it.
Yeah. There's minibus taxis everywhere, and the chassis are very similar. So, so you're gonna get the car fixed. You're not gonna have too much of a problem. Whereas in America, I think you could pretty much probably drive anything, and well, probably Americans better, but you can drive anything. I'd drive a comfortable car because the roads would be right. And then lastly, the last one was supposed to be last, but I forgot about this one. In Cape Town, a 23-year-old who tried to cheat on their way to their learner's license last Friday morning was busted and put in jail.
Jail? That's a bit strong.
So there was this examiner who was militaristic and spotted this applicant copying from a piece of paper the answers to the test. And apparently this guy has busted 50 other suspects.
Wow, so he's running like a syndicate.
And and charges them with fraud.
Jeepers.
Believe it or not. So good on Cape Town. I don't think it's entirely a bad thing.
Yeah. George, thanks as always for being with us. Short and sweet this week. Gareth and Sia will be back completely as of Tuesday. I think we can talk about this next week, but I hear there's the, you know, when Merck sometimes get a Maybach, the double cab, the Bucky's get a Maybach.
Maybach, the is it an SUV?
Well, let's talk about this next week.
Okay,
because I need to do some more research on it. I've seen a few pictures. People have sent me a couple of things, but this to me would be the ultimate in, you know, like you see these things that Ford do,
like the F-150, you know, and
like these big upgrades.
Yeah,
but to have this in a Maybach Bucky, I think Merck have gone now that they jump in the shark with this one. But I need to look into it because, I mean, I'm seeing initial reports around this.
I'll do some research. We can have a chat next week.
Oh, just imagine the jacuzzi party in that thing.
A bakuzi.
The bakuzi in the back of a Maybach Bucky.
You have to do that in four ways.
Sheep, you can do it anywhere in the world. Poppy, any closing thoughts for the big week? How have we done?
I think we've been okay.
Just the two of us? It's just been the two of us, George.
It's been great. We're going to be besties by the time Gareth and them get back.
Yeah.
It's Gareth been a bonding experience.
Gareth and Sia in London. Gold's been put down.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. And Poppy's looking for an AI and makeup remover.
Well, amongst other things, I'm actually hoping for tonight that... who's playing tonight? Russia, right? Russia, Croatia? Is
tomorrow.
It that tonight? That's
tomorrow is
so
Russia.
So who's tonight? Sorry, I'm really invested in this World Cup.
Yeah, clearly, and my sport. Tonight you'll be able to see Brazil versus Belgium.
Okay.
At 8.
Okay.
France versus Uruguay at 4. That's your World Cup.
I'm
tomorrow
here for Uruguay.
Tomorrow,
and
Russia, Croatia at 4, and England versus Sweden at 8.
Can we take bets? I don't cool.
What do you want
so
to?
I'm saying Russia, you're saying Croatia.
Yeah.
How much?
You want to bet on Vladimir Putin's pulling the strings that far in the tournament?
Yes. 500 Rand. 500 I want
Rand.
My money on Monday. Do not mess with me.
You got it, Poppy.
The question is, why has Russia got this far?
Exactly. They're going to the final.
Is it because it's the home country? I mean, we didn't get that far.
In life or in football? Because it's the same answer. Vladimir Putin.
Truth be told.
Vladimir Putin both ways.
Maybe they've got makeup removers there, Poppy.
Just whatever they got, they are going to unleash it this weekend. Anyway, catch you back on Monday. We've got the interview with Jonathan Witt, who he fights against... he fights against people who believe in crystals to heal the body over his medicine. That's coming up next. Otherwise, we've got Sex Talk with John T. Searle at around 10. Before that, the Just Not Comedy Show with Dave Levinson and his crew of lovely men. We'll catch you back on Monday.
This is CliffCentral.com.